This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2021, held at Faith Builders from August 2 through 6.
To learn about collaboration, we should practice some collaboration. So while you're coming in, one of the most powerful forms of collaboration in educating for the kingdom is singing. So I would like you to collaborate with me in singing "Thou Art Worthy" from Revelation 4:11. And from Revelation 7:9-12, "After this I beheld, and lo, a great multitude, which no man could number, of all nations, and kindreds, and people, and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palms in their hands, and cried with a loud voice, saying, Salvation to our God, which sitteth upon the throne, and unto the Lamb. And all the angels stood round about the throne and about the elders and the four beasts, and fell down before the throne on their faces and worshiped God, saying, Amen, blessing and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be unto our God forever and ever. Amen." Kingdom vision is always big picture, getting at the heart of the matter, taking action. Tell all nations. Plant the seed in your classroom. One thing we notice about this picture is we'll never get there without many people. People from all nations. I don't know what you dream of in heaven, whether you're hoping for an individual hotel suite or a private hunting cottage or a hermitage. But I think for most of us, we're looking forward to all the people that are going to be in heaven. Heaven is most probably not individual hotel suites. So heaven is a celebration of the web of relationships that we have created with God at the center. You are part of something bigger than yourself. The culmination is yet to come. We are looking forward to this and working backward to now. Consider Ubuntu, which is African for I am because you are. To explain Ubuntu a little more, an anthropologist proposed a game to children of an African tribe. He put a basket of fruit near a tree and told the kids that the first one to reach the fruit would win it all. When he told them to run, they all took each other's hands and ran together, then sat down together, enjoying the fruits. When asked why they ran like that, as one could have had all the fruit, they said, Ubuntu, how can one of us be happy if all the others are sad? Ubuntu is a philosophy of African tribes that can be summed up, I am because you are. Desmond Tutu says, it is the essence of being human. It speaks of the fact that my humanity is caught up and is inextricably bound up in yours. I am human because I belong. And Nelson Mandela said, in Africa, there is a concept known as Ubuntu, the profound sense that we are human only through the humanity of others. That if we are to accomplish anything in this world, it will be in equal measure be due to the work and achievement of others. And Desmond Tutu said, you can't be human all by yourself. And when you have this quality, Ubuntu, you are known for your generosity. We think of ourselves far too frequently as just individuals separated from one another, whereas you are connected and what you do affects the whole world. So, teachers, what you do affects the whole world. You are architects of the future church. Your chisel mark will be left on those living stones, for good or bad. Here's a little diagram that compares Ubuntu with Western philosophy, not original with me. But we need to understand we're from the Western Hemisphere. And over here, we tend to think of life as a giant machine, and we are all cogs in the wheel. So we have a big factory, and you're down here as an individual. And so this implies, although it's rarely stated, that we might be dispensable. If a part in a machine breaks, you just replace it with another one or with someone else. So if someone isn't doing their job well, they should be replaced. While Ubuntu is not Christian per se, it's close to our kingdom values in that it emphasizes that we are all tied together and we are organisms, we are alive. As Jesus taught in the Good Samaritan parable, the essence of love is, we'll never let anyone behind. Love conquers all. So we're talking about collaboration. Let's have a definition. And I'll give some more examples before we get into the three main points. So here's a definition for you for collaboration. The action of working with someone to produce or create something. A story. A team of about 35 employees had come together for a team building event. They were a young, bright, enthusiastic team. But one problem the team leader saw is that they wouldn't share information or solutions with each other. The leader felt they were too self-focused and not focused on team. So she came up with an activity that would allow her to teach the importance of teamwork to each team member. She brought them all into the cafeteria. All the tables and chairs had been put away, and there were hundreds of balloons in the cafeteria. Everyone was excited, but not sure what it was about. And in addition to the balloons that were already blown up, there were a box of balloons not blown up yet, and they were told, blow up a balloon and write your name on it. Do it carefully, because if you pop it, you're disqualified. So everybody wrote their name on a balloon, a couple popped, but most of them survived. They left the room, round one. Round two, come back to the room, and meantime, the balloons had been mixed up. So amidst the hundreds of other balloons is your balloon with your name on it. Find it. 15 minutes later, not one single person had been able to find their balloon. As you keep looking, these balloons move around, and maybe where you already searched, something else already moved there. Round two, leave the room. Come back. Oh, and by the way, don't pop any balloons or you're disqualified. A couple popped. Bring the people back. Round three. If you find a balloon that has a person's name on it, give it to them. Within a couple minutes, every team member had their balloon with their name on it. And so, we are much more efficient when we are willing to share with each other. We are better problem solvers when we're working together, not individually. So as a teacher, you have to discern which things in your school are best done together. There are parts of singing that should be practiced individually to carry a tune, or softball, particular skills you need to have, or discussion. But think of singing, softball, and discussion. They're best done in a group, right? There's a synergy that comes. Best done in a group. Other things like prayer, reading, or running, we might think of individual activities, but even those things, there's a synergy that comes. Your running is improved if you're racing against someone else. Your reading is improved if you listen to others in the classroom. Your prayer is improved if you listen or do it with others. Here's another example of the need for collaboration. A picture of my wife and I whitewater rafting with some students the other year. I believe I'm up here. Our guide, Rodney, told us to paddle, and that when he said it, he meant it, and it was very important. After we went through our rapids successfully, he said he had a group that just wouldn't paddle. The front went up and dumped them all out. And they said, "What happened?" And he said, "You didn't paddle." And here's an African proverb. If you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Again, if you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Let's go on together. So, if we want our students to have hearts of compassion, creative minds, and take the action of working together and get along with each other, how do we get there? How do we get to collaborative students? And this is a great vision from the church, for the church. One of my favorite verses is from Ephesians 3:10. To the intent that now unto the principalities and powers in heavenly places might be known by the church, the manifold wisdom of God. So God intends that through the church working together, even the angels will be impressed by what the church can do. So we as teachers need to have hearts of collaboration, be collaborative ourselves, be willing to work with each other. And by the way, there is great strength in collaborating with other teachers, which is beyond the scope of today's discussion, but be sure to work with fellow teachers as well. So how do we get here? Again, we are going to consider, how did Jesus teach with collaboration? How do others teach with collaboration? And how can I teach with collaboration? First of all, how did Jesus teach with collaboration? He had 12 disciples. Acts 1:8, but ye shall receive power, and after that the Holy Ghost is come upon you, and ye shall be witnesses unto me both in Jerusalem, and in all Judea, and in Samaria, and unto the uttermost part of the earth. Notice Jesus didn't try to heal and change the whole world by himself. Although maybe he could have snapped his fingers and had all the blind and lepers healed. He set an example and started a movement. 12 disciples built the church. So here's an illustration you can use in devotions or Bible class sometime. And I'll ask my wife to come up. Give some of your children candy to spread out to illustrate how the gospel is spread. So I think 2 bags of candy will be enough for you. We don't have 12 disciples, but imagine we have 2 disciples. So yeah, she's going to start one over here and one over here somewhere. And the bag of Skittles, which you're welcome to help yourself to, and have as much as you want, represents the gospel. Okay? You've been handed a gift, the gospel. What are you going to do with it? That's about the extent of my instructions. Although I will mention, if the gospel is spread faithfully, by lunchtime, you could probably, we did check the multiplication there on the, you know, serving size, and theoretically there are enough Skittles for all of you, but I don't know about you in the back. Because they're pretty good Skittles. What are they, Bright Side or something? So I'm not sure if the gospel is going to make it the whole way to the back of the room or not. We'll see. By the way, those of you up front here, you're welcome to have as many as you want. But the goal is to spread the gospel to the whole room. So that's an example, an illustration you could do with your students to emphasize collaboration. A little more on Jesus calling the 12 together. In Luke 9, after he had called the 12 together, he gave them power and authority to cast out all demons and sent them out to preach the kingdom of God and heal the sick. He told them, take nothing for the journey, no staff, no bag, no bread, no money, no extra tunic, no cell phone. No. Whatever house you enter, stay there until you leave that town. If the people don't welcome you, shake the dust off your feet. So they went out to village, everywhere. So Jesus gave them a test here, an assignment. He had preached the gospel. Here are the Skittles. The test is it going to get there? So you go out now, and notice later we hear about going groups of 2. We're indebted to Matthew in chapter 10 for telling us some pairs sent out 2 by 2, Simon and Andrew, Thomas and Matthew, James and John, James and Thaddeus, etc. So gave them, after the whole group teaching, he divided them up and said, okay, now can you practice this? Let's go out and practice this. Jesus gave them a homework assignment while he was still here. And they probably didn't even realize what he was doing, much in the same way your students don't always realize what you're preparing them for. We're doing math today so that you can be successful later in life. They're not thinking so much about later in life. But he was preparing them. Much like our students don't see the big picture. So he sent them out in 2 by 2 teams or small groups. Another thing Jesus did is, that was sending out the 12 that I was talking about. Another thing Jesus did is washing feet. Washing feet is something we still do together. Usually not to get the feet washed either. But to say more powerfully than we could in words that we are committed to loving each other in our church. The real test then is in our pocketbooks, along the road, etc. Are we actually going to serve others? Washing feet is mostly a symbolism for us today. One thing I thought was interesting, Messiah College, historically a Brethren college, hands out a towel of service along with their diploma, which I thought was a nice picture of what education should be about. So you got this diploma, which represents powerful knowledge, but what are you going to do with it? Are you going to serve yourself, build up yourself, lord over others? You were taught, now go serve, be useful. So Jesus did that by example. And the garden. In the garden, Jesus needed his disciples to be with him to watch and pray. As a human, he couldn't do it alone. He went back and woke them up. And yet, as God, he did make it through. Never underestimate the power of prayer. Think of Peter getting out of prison. Various people have been cured of cancer when a church prays. This is a major cooperative work of the church that Jesus taught by example in his greatest time of need, as it were, prayer. Moving on to how do others teach with collaboration? You know, students in lecture are not attentive about 40% of the time. So, I don't know if somebody's off to the side here to measure the percentage today, but students may retain 70% of the first 10 minutes, but only 20% of the last 10 minutes. So here's a story from one professor called From Dictation to Cooperation. This was from Education World magazine. Dr. Theodore Penitz said, "I used to be a very good lecturer." And I'll summarize here some of the things he did. He had class goals every day, provided an overview of the concepts under study, led the class through a series of problems and questions that demonstrated the concept or mathematical principle. He was an engineering and math teacher. And he even incorporated humor into his lecture, which helped lighten the heavy topics of math. He had a good reputation among the students of his college in Massachusetts. He got high marks on student evaluations. His courses filled up quickly, and the feedback from students was very positive. He said, in his experience, the students seemed to understand what he said. He tended to be very enthusiastic. Everything was going fine. Until the test arrived. It seemed that the students did not perform as well on the test as either they or Professor Penitz had expected. They felt frustrated. They felt they had understood the material in class, but when they went home and tried to solve it on their own or do it on the test, it seemed like Greek. So, Professor Penitz rethought his classes, and he also got a doctorate, and thought about the benefits of cooperative learning, and he went back and made some changes to his class. Here are three of his favorite cooperative learning activities that he shared with Education World, and I'll just summarize them quickly. I don't have time to explain them all. Maybe you could research them more if you wanted. So, three things that transformed his class to help the students retain more knowledge, even though the class had been good before. First of all, pair reading. In this exercise, students work in pairs, and they both read the same assigned material. And then it's broken down. The instructor might tell them to do it paragraph by paragraph or concept by concept. And the one explains what the paragraph was saying. So what did this paragraph in the story, what was happening in this paragraph in the story? The other listens. Then in the next paragraph, the rules change. The other explains and the other listens. And they keep changing back and forth until they've read all the material and go back to their seats, and then he picks some at random to share. Did you understand what the material was about? The second activity he did was Math Olympics, where, and he was teaching math and engineering. The students were in groups of four, but he put five problems on the board. So one extra problem kept the groups from simply dividing up the problems. They had to do all five. And then it's a competition, in a sense, between the groups. but all of them need to do all of the problems. And then they go write their answers up on the board. And if wrong answers are showing up, then he stops and corrects and maybe gives some instruction as needed. So the students are actively involved in solving many problems in a short period of time. And the third thing he did was factoring jigsaw. There are different kinds of jigsaw that he was doing, working with factoring polynomials, which I won't ask for a raise of hand on how many of you can factor polynomials. But it worked well for him to have groups of four because there are four basic components to factoring a polynomial where the coefficient of the first term is one. And the goal of jigsaw is for each student to become an expert in their subject area. So you could do this in other subjects as well. So students are numbered off into groups, but then everyone who has example one gets with group one, group two, group three, group four, and they figure out and become experts on how to factor polynomials in this way. And then they get back together and teach it to their own groups. Moving on to some student feedback. Here's a story about a teacher who came up with a rubric and had students give each other feedback. So on the big scoring day, each student read and scored three other students' work. To the teacher's surprise, the students worked hard and thoughtfully during the process. They also signed the bottom of the paper. When the scored papers were handed back, total silence reigned while each student read the comments. Very few went back to their seats. Many of them stopped mid-place to read the rubric and comments. The teacher waited for pandemonium, but it never came. Most were satisfied that the comments were accurate. No one was given a grade, just the opportunity to fix anything that needed fixing. The kids loved it. They got lots of comments, good ideas from seeing each other's work, and a better idea of how they stacked up with the others. And 2 days to redo it before the teacher scored it. So there's an idea for you. The teacher needs to provide some kind of direction, though. So in this case, the teacher provided a rubric, which is a checklist of things you're looking for. And then students graded each other's work, gave feedback, and especially teenage level, but student peer pressure is peer opinion, peer values are some of the most important in their life. They don't always read the teacher's comments or care what the teacher says, but what their classmates say, my, that's important. So this would be a way to capitalize on that, have them grade each other's work, and yet it didn't go into the grade book. The teacher still graded it. So it was a way to reevaluate their writing before handing it in for a final grade. And lastly, some comments from students here, some student statements on collaborative learning. One student says, you can usually get a lot more done in a shorter amount of time. Working in a group allows for people to think as one and help others become unstuck. Another student says, each member of the group has something unique that he or she can contribute. When it comes to solving a problem, the other group members may be able to think of things that the one individual may not have on his or her own. Another student says, I'm able to learn more, truly understand things better. If I get the opportunity to teach someone else, I will learn the material even better if I can explain it to someone else. Another student says, students can relate to one another more easily than to a teacher. And lastly, another student said, years from now, when you are put in the same situation at work, you won't find yourself blowing your lid like many of your inexperienced coworkers will. Teamwork helps improve social skills and provides a more real-life work scenario. I believe cooperative learning is very helpful because it gives you a taste of what you have to do in the real world. Now, I will say this takes practice and instruction to develop in your classroom. And you might think it works better for high school or college students, and in some ways it might, but younger students can be given simple collaborative activities to do as well. But be sure you think through and give the instructions that are needed before you start, and it will take them practice to learn how to work together productively. So, moving on to how can I teach with collaboration? First of all, we'll look at some graphic organizers. So, find a piece of paper, I hope you have one, and copy down this graphic organizer you see on the screen. That's a flower, okay? Or it's just a big circle with four smaller circles around it, and then you can do some squiggles at the bottom. So this graphic organizer is designed to illustrate one main point in the center, supporting details on the outer petals of the flower, we could call them. And again, I'll say, for something like this, elementary teachers might have to do more together as the class, and older teachers might be able to split their students up and say, go do this. So now we're going to, once you have this copied down, I'll go over the instructions here, and then we're going to try a little activity together. I'm going to assign you to get in groups of about four, because there are four petals, so that would be ideal, but three or five is okay too. You're going to write the word teachers in the center of your flower in the big circle, because that's what you all are or are becoming. And then you are going to write something unique about yourself in one of the supporting details petals. Be as unique and creative as possible. And it's okay if it overlaps with somebody else in the audience, but if you're really creative here, you might think, what's the most unique thing about me that I'm pretty sure won't apply to anybody else in the audience? So I traveled to, you know, some foreign country, or something that's unique about yourself. Okay, so I'll go over this again. Write teachers in the center, choose one of the petals, it doesn't matter which, write something unique about yourself in that petal. Next, we'll get in groups of four, which you are all responsible teachers, so you can create your own groups. And you're going to share your one thing and hear the other three things from the other people and write them down in your circle. And by the time we're done, you'll have four things written that are unique about the teachers here at Faith Builders in the gym right now, okay? And then I want to hear a few most unusual things. Okay, any questions before we start? Okay, if you still want to finish that up, that's fine. So see what we've ended up with here. In school, you would be maybe doing this about insects or something, but I just wanted to do something personal for you. So in your group, you were all teachers, okay, I hope. And yet there were unique things about you. So let's hear a few unique things that will be of interest to us that we didn't know about someone else in the room here. We're all teachers, but call something out. And it doesn't have to be about you. It can be, you can share about somebody else. One of your petals, anybody? Bitten by a tarantula. Somebody on your flower was written bitten by a tarantula. Good. Went to Kenya. Was that? Lived. Lived in Kenya. And knows Swahili? Okay. Lived in Kenya. Good. Someone else? Speaks Haitian Creole. And one more. Sixteen different kinds of tropical fish. Very good. Okay. Thank you. So we talked about, another type of graphic organizer here is the Venn diagram. How many of you are familiar with Venn diagram already? Okay, most of us. So we'll just go over this quickly. For those of you that have not heard of this, you should consider using this at times. The best way to use it is to compare two things. You make two circles, but they cross each other in the center, and whatever information in the center is shared about whales and fish, and the information, I'll put some information up here for you. Whatever is on the left is about whales only, and whatever is on the right is about fish. I use color here to help you understand that. It doesn't have to be color. So they both live in the water in the center, but whales have hair, and fish lay eggs. So there are different things. So you could have particular things you want the students to find. You could brainstorm together. Or you could assign them in groups to discover it on your own. Here's a Venn diagram, and this works for all different types of subject areas wherever there's contrast. And you can even add a third circle if you want, or maybe more, that overlap, you know, and add more circles for more comparison. Okay, so we looked at graphic organizers, looking at two examples. There are many more, and so you can search for them online or in books or whatever if you're interested in finding more graphic organizer ideas. Develop your own. I have a graphic organizer I developed for the period after World War II in American history. So phenomenal, it changed our country. So I developed a graphic organizer to show how the baby boom generation changed so much with cars and credit cards and changed our nation. Or have them create their own. Say, here's the information. We've done graphic organizers now. You would have, they should have previous knowledge before you assign this. But create your own graphic organizer. It could be a flow chart, could be circles, could be squares or whatever. How can we organize this knowledge? Does it touch and overlap, or does it flow like this? And see if they can create their own. Next, think, pair, share. This is where you pose a question that bears considering, give them some time to think, and then pair up. You could have pre-arranged partners in your room in your seating arrangement, or assign partners or small groups and have them share. So let's try this as well. I have a question for you. Why should teachers use think, pair, share? Why should teachers use think, pair, share? So you can start thinking about that while I review what we're going to do. So first of all, the teacher poses a question that's worth considering. Why should teachers use think, pair, share? You think about it and give some think time. Then you assign, or I'm just going to ask you to find a partner and share with them what you think, they share with you what they think, vice versa. And then as a teacher, I often ask for a few random, or if your class is small, you could hear from everybody. Sometimes, say in Bible class, if it was important enough, I want to hear what everybody thought about this, or just hear some random suggestions. So you had some time to think about this. Why should teachers use think, pair, share? Pair up and share with the person beside you. Go. And then as a teacher, you can be walking around the room, making sure they're actually on task, and circulating and being available for questions, engaging when it's dying down and when it's time to say, okay, now I'd like to hear some ideas. So I'd love to hear your ideas, but I don't have time for that today. Another idea, you can continue discussing that at lunch. Another variation on that is think, write, pair, share, where you take the time to have them write down what they're thinking first before they share it with someone else, and it might stick a little more. Another idea is pairs check. This is especially good for some type of skill-based learning. You teach a skill, then two students practice it with each other and give each other feedback. So say tying a bandage in health class, then you split them up in groups of two, because you as a teacher can't watch everyone at once if they're practicing something. And also it's less embarrassing than doing it in front of the whole class if they just do it with a partner and can't figure out how to do it. It gives them more ownership and interest if they're doing something instead of just watching you. Another idea is round table, round robin. There are many variations on this. In round table, you assign a topic, usually a list, and a time limit. So for instance, you could say, I'm going to give you 1 minute to name 10 US presidents. This is a team competition, so you divide your students into equal-sized teams and give them a little think or strategy time and then give a signal. And you don't need 10 students in your group because they can keep going around the table. So the first student, when you say go, will write down a U.S. president, George Washington, right? Then he will hand it to the next person, who will write down John Adams because they already have him memorized. If not, he'll write down Abraham Lincoln, right? And then pass around to the next person. Someone puts down Eli Whitney because that's an important name we studied about recently. The next student says, it doesn't count. So he crosses it off, but that counts as his turn. So you keep going until they actually got 10 to qualify. They stand up and they're hoping to beat the other groups to get to 10 first, the 10 facts that you assigned them. And then round robin could be similar, but you can just talk instead of maybe one person keep a list instead of passing around and writing. So you can research them more if you're interested. Lineups, Here you state the poles are opposite extremes. This works best for opposite sides of an issue. Maybe better with older students, but it could be done with younger students as well for a math problem. For instance, what's the correct answer to this math problem? And then here's one, and here's 100, and you're going to get out of your seat and stand somewhere on this continuum where you think the correct answer should be, and then defend your answer. So for older students, an issue, should school be required? Should students have to learn a foreign language? And then they line themselves up physically where you've demarcated where they think they are, and then they can defend that. Or you can bend the line around so that they're meeting someone with the opposite opinion on the end and have to discuss it with that person. And this could even just be a starter for going back to your seat then and writing an essay to defend your position. Role play. A character in history, a news interview like Thomas Jefferson. I like to do this in history class, so they're assigned maybe in groups of two to research Thomas Jefferson and then share an interview. So they come back to the class and I'll give one of them a highlighter or something. So today here we have Thomas Jefferson. How are you doing, Tom? And they put some creativity into it, and this guy pretends to be Thomas Jefferson. And then this person asks him questions, which reveals facts about Thomas Jefferson in a more exciting way than just writing them down fact after fact. And the three S's, stand up, speak up, sit down. This is a type of review or reinforcement where you snake through the audience and maybe we're calling out answers for review. What makes an insect? And I will call on somebody's name, they stand up, speak the answer, sit down, call on somebody else randomly, and just quickly go through the student body. A collaborative story. Each student can start a story and pass it around the classroom. So as it goes around, you're adding to the story. So think of some creative beginning. He went outside too, and the next student writes why he went outside. The other one doesn't like that, so they twist it, etc. And keep going around until you decide the story is done. And discussion. Don't underestimate the power of discussion. Practice leading it and using it in your classroom. Ask good questions. Again, teachers of elementary students might think first graders can't discuss. And maybe they can't figure out why the Roman Empire fell, but you can discuss ways to be nice on the playground and have them each contribute. So I think there's something for everyone here. I'd like to finish up with one quote and a short story yet. Telling our students to sit quietly and listen will not turn them into lifelong learners or engaged citizens. Today's students need to be learning with others. Social engagement. There is synergy that comes from being part of a group with a common goal or task. Like other social creatures, students enjoy being part of a close-knit group that works together. So, even if students aren't fascinated with the content you're teaching, and they wouldn't normally study whales, some people would, but if they wouldn't normally study whales and fish on their own, the way you're doing it, the synergy you're providing is drawing them in, and they want to be in the classroom because they feel that synergy. We're working together on something. There's a synergy that comes from being part of a common goal or a common task. And finally, a little story about the farmer with his mule, Chadwick. The man was driving his car down the road and went off into the ditch. So the farmer happened to be plowing nearby with his mule, Chadwick. And yeah, he could pull the car out, so he brought Chadwick over and hitched him up to the car. And he said, "Go, Chadwick, go, Thomas, go, Betsy, go, Jill." And he named off a couple other names as if they were on the team with Chadwick, and Chadwick pulled the car out. Well, the guy said, "Why did you call out all those other names?" Oh, the farmer said, "Well, Chadwick is blind, but if he believes he's pulling with other people, he'll be able to do it."
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4000. 4769.